Hear ye, hear ye. You are listening to an old-timey podcast. I'm Normie C.
And I'm Kristen Caruso.
And on this episode, I'll be talking about a tragedy on Long's Peak.
Oh, my.
Oh, is that funny, Kristen?
No, it's not funny. I was just like, I've been feeling really light and summery all day, okay? Mm-hmm. I've got my little Dirty Diet Coke here. I'm just, you know, ready for a little poolside story. Would it have killed you to do a light one is what I'm asking you?
As you'll soon find out, this is like the opposite of a beach poolside story.
Great. Great.
But it is a story I've been very fascinated by for a long time, so I was excited to cover it. But it is kind of sad.
Okay. Well, speaking of kind of sad.
Oh.
We're going on vacation, Norman.
That's right.
No, it's exciting for us. We are taking the month of June off. We are going to become refreshed, bedazzled, and vajazzled.
Oh.
This June.
I'm getting vajazzled, too.
It can happen to anybody, Norm. Look out.
Okay.
You see someone coming at you with some sequins? You better start running, my friend.
Your crotch sure is sparkly.
But if you are like, oh no, I can't go on without new content from the Carusos. Well, guess what, sweetheart? Head on over to patreon.com/oldtimeypodcast because we'll be dropping a fresh new bonus episode over there. At the $5 level, you get access to all of our bonus episodes and you get them on video so you can look at us.
Mm-hmm. You can look at us with our new vajazzled crotches.
We're not showing our vajazzled crotches. That would be $7
easy. Just $2 more?
I can think of dozens of people who would gladly pay $7 to see it.
We are not desperate for money, I promise.
So, yeah, I am very excited that we're going to take the month of June to just relax. Yeah. We'll still do all our Patreon stuff. We're going to have trivia. Mm-hmm. We're going to drop our bonus episodes. So if you want to hang out with us, join us over there. And in the meantime, we'll be putting up some of our favorite episodes on the main feed, just rebroadcasting.
Yeah, we'll do little intros for them, but yeah, just gonna put up some of our old favorites.
Okay, Norm, are you ready to bum us out?
Oh, gosh, I guess. But a lot of good things came out of this story, okay? So, you know, silver linings, right?
Okay.
Kristen, first question I have for you. You want to get high?
I mean, yeah, sure.
Yeah? All right, let's do it. Rocky Mountain High. Rocky Mountain High. No, we're not smoking that jazz cabbage, Kristen. We are at Long's Peak, the tallest mountain in Rocky Mountain National Park, Colorado. Seasoned hikers and climbers call this bad boy a 14er, which means its peak is more than 14,000 feet above sea level. The climb up Long's Peak is beautiful. It's considered one of the wildest and most impressive spots in the mountains of Colorado, seemingly untouched by mankind. Well, for the most part anyway. Because at 13,400 feet above, you might notice a small circular structure. It's tiny, 8 square feet, with a single door, 2 windows, and a conical ceiling.
What's a conical ceiling?
Like a cone.
Oh, okay.
It's made entirely out of stone to blend in with the environment. Hmm. And you might be wondering, what the heck is this thing doing all the way up here? Luckily, just to the left of that door is a plaque! And it states that this little building is known as the Agnes Vale Shelter. Who was Agnes Vale? She was what you might call a mountain woman. She was adventurous, independent, a thrill seeker who wasn't afraid to take on the toughest hiking and climbing challenges. And she did it all in the early 20th century, a time when hiking and climbing up mountains wasn't considered very ladylike. So today I'd like to tell you her incredible, harrowing story of climbing Long's Peak and how she forever changed the way America's national parks operate. Hmm. Are you ready, Kristen?
Yeah, I am.
What are you thinking right now?
I'm excited.
Oh. Really?
Well, you and I both love the mountains. We love hiking.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like hearing a badass story about a lady.
That's right. And we've climbed up Long's Peak, but not all the way.
I was going to say.
We stopped.
Give me a break. I don't remember any conicals.
We climbed up to Chasm Lake, okay. which is that beautiful crystal clear lake.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But then we were like, that's far enough, and we went back
down.
And
then we ate our sandwiches and went back
that's
down.
That's right. So, Kristen, let's travel back in time.
Doo-doo.
Doo-doo. Give us a live version.
Doo-doo.
There we go. It's April 16th, 1890, in Lexington, Massachusetts, where the first shots of the American Revolution rang out. And on that day, the Vail family welcomed their third daughter, Agnes Vail. What do you think of the name Agnes?
I think it is terrible. I think it's a tragic name, and it just needs to stop.
It's time to stop?
I mean, I think it has stopped.
Mm-hmm. I haven't met any Agneses lately.
No, I think there's been a resurgence of the older names, which I enjoy. It's really the only reason I married Norman, you know? It was all about the name. But Agnes, boy.
That's a rough one.
It's tough to be sexy when you're Agnes.
Well, Agnes was born into a very prominent family, Kristen. Mm. Her mother was Harriet Agnes Walcott, the daughter of the famous Reverend Samuel Walcott. Reverend Walcott was known for his many public speeches during the American Civil War and for writing more than 200 hymns. How big of a deal was he? He has a Wikipedia page.
Okay, yep.
That's all we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes's father was Frederick Vail, an incredibly successful businessman, Harvard educated. Frederick had made all of his money thanks to this newfangled invention called the telephone. Frederick was actually an associate of the telephone's inventor, Alexander Graham Bell, who also invented a metal detector to try to save James Garfield, right, Kristen?
Yeah, but he failed. Thanks for bringing it up. I mean, he didn't fail, but you know.
He did his best. We're all trying to do our best out
That's
here.
That's right.
So Alexander Graham Bell gave Frederick Vail a license to set up a telephone business out west in some bumfuck town called Denver, Colorado.
Who's ever heard of that?
But, you know, this was back in the 1870s, and during that time, Denver was kind of a bumfuck town. It had plank sidewalks, ditches in every street, dirt roads that kicked up clouds of dust as horse-drawn carriages made their way through town. Frederick Vail believed in Denver, though. He was awestruck by its natural beauty. And so in 1878, he started the Colorado Telephone Company with 161 subscribers. Well, believe it or not, Kristen, telephone was a pretty big hit.
Sure.
And soon the company expanded their territory and they became the Mountain States Telephone and Telegraph Company. And the success made the Vail family multimillionaires. And so it should go without saying that our subject, Agnes Vail, lived a very privileged life in Denver, Colorado. They lived in a beautiful custom-built home located at...
Oh my God. Okay, hang on. Hold your freaking horses. Okay. Get it because of the streets with the horses. Okay.
Right, right.
Anyhow, give me that address.
1401 Franklin Street, Denver, Colorado.
Ooh, it is on Zillow?
Well, I should mention...
Don't do that?
Uh-oh.
Okay, hang on. Okay, now I'm just on the Google Street View because you got all your panties in a twist over me going to Zillow.
No.
A beautiful brick home. Okay. You know, it's not quite as big as I was thinking it might be, but I guess that's just... Oh, wait. I'm moving Google around. She's bigger than she looks from the front.
This is a...
Which is what they say about me.
it is much bigger than you think, Kristen. Today, it looks like it's been split up into condos.
Yes, it has.
Seven condos in that building. And they're all like two bed, two bath.
Wow.
So this was a big house. One of those condos recently sold for $675,000.
Wow. Molly Brown's house was just down the street.
Really?
Yeah. Ever heard of Titanic? Holy crap.
Oh, man. The unsinkable Molly Brown. Future topic?
Where's your little ding?
I don't have the ding. We're just going to have to do this.
Okay.
The fart means yes. So, yeah. Lived in a pretty sweet house.
Yeah.
Agnes and her sisters went to the best schools. They learned musical instruments. Agnes herself was a talented pianist. They traveled frequently in the summers, visiting family in Kansas and Massachusetts. But another sign of their wealth was that Agnes and her sisters were really into this new hobby called mountain climbing. At that time, mountain climbing was really a rich person's activity. Oh. It required a lot of free time, traveling, equipment, resources. Most middle and lower class people simply didn't have the means to take a couple days off work and go climb a mountain. But rich folks? No problem. And if they lacked experience, a rich person would simply hire a couple of guides to take them safely to the top of a mountain. Agnes Vail really fell in love with hiking and climbing. And living in Denver, she had plenty of easy access to tons of incredible climbs. And climbing mountains at an early age grew her adventurous spirit. But in 1908, at the age of 18, Agnes Vail had to leave the beautiful mountains of Colorado and head back east. She got accepted into an elite all-female school located in Northampton, Massachusetts. Smith College. Kristen, as a Simmons University graduate, I'm sure your blood is boiling right now at the very mention of Smith College.
I've actually never heard of Smith. Is it a big deal or something?
Oh, shut up.
Seven Sisters, never heard of any of them. I've only ever heard of Simmons University.
So, for real, were you aware of Smith College?
Of course. Yeah. Yes. No, that's a very big deal.
Okay. So, yeah, Agnes Vail got into Smith College. Mm-hmm. She really grew into herself physically and emotionally.
That sounds creepy when you say it like that. What do you mean? She just hit puberty a little late?
I guess so.
What do you mean you guess so? Why are you just saying words?
Kind of. Agnes was a tall gal, Kristen.
We love it. How tall was she?
You know, I don't quite know her precise height, mm-hmm. but definitely at least 5'8". At least.
Oh, man. And adjusted for inflation, 5'8 in 1908 was probably like 6'3".
Yeah, she was okay. A giant. Mm-hmm. She crushed people everywhere.
Okay.
She was a, quote, strong, husky woman. One friend described Agnes as, quote, a restful person and gentle and quiet, even tempered, not critical of others. She had a nice sense of humor and a special kind of buoyancy. Her mouth turned up at the corners naturally and her personality went along with it.
I know that buoyancy doesn't mean what I think it to mean in my head.
It means Agnes floated easily in water.
That's what I, anytime a person is described as buoyant, I think of them going, bub, bub, bub.
Yeah, I had to look it up too. It means.
It probably means like go with the flow, adaptable,
cheerful,
happy.
Lighthearted, yeah. Resilient.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also floats in a lake really well.
Exactly. Agnes got involved in a variety of activities at Smith College. She was a member of the press board, which handled things like the school newspaper and the yearbook. She also regularly participated in theater productions. She was kind of a social butterfly. But the mountains were always calling her back, so after graduating from Smith College in 1912, Agnes Vail returned home to Denver. As a young college graduate with basically unlimited money, Agnes spent most of her time traveling the country, going on hikes, and climbing mountains with family and friends. And lucky for us, Kristen, we know about a few of these outings because old-timey newspapers reported on literally everything. Breaking news, Sloppy Jim farted on Saturday at the dry goods store.
He's always doing that. Why does it always have to make the papers?
Why do you think we dubbed him Sloppy Jim? So, for example, in 1913, Agnes Vail took a friend named Mrs. W.T. Hewitt to Yosemite Valley for 10 days. In 1914, Agnes and several of her family members explored the Grand Canyon. But Agnes Vail was also active in her local community, too. She was a member of the newly formed Colorado Mountain Club. The Colorado Mountain Club had formed in 1912 by a group of mountain climbing enthusiasts in the Denver area. The club regularly went on group outings, exploring the mountains and lakes and wild forests of Colorado. But they were also an advocacy group. The Colorado Mountain Club were one of several groups who pushed the government to turn the Rocky Mountains into a national park. And they got their wish in 1915, when it became the 10th official national park in the United States. But Agnes Vail wouldn't get much time to explore the new park, because in 1917, the United States entered the Great War, a.k.a. World War I. A.K.A. the most boring war of all time, according to
Kristen. Well, according to us all.
No. The ever-adventurous Agnes Vale answered the call for volunteers. She joined the Red Cross and spent the next several years over in war-torn Europe. And it's clear from Agnes's writings that that experience changed her. It toughened her spirit greatly. In one letter, she wrote that it was incredibly demanding work and that for the first time in her life, she truly felt she had enough to do.
Hmm.
After the war ended in November of 1918, Agnes Vale returned to Denver. By that point, her mother had passed away. Her two sisters had gotten married and were living with their new hubbies. So Agnes moved in with her dad, Frederick Vale, and readjusted back to the civilian life. She went back to school and eventually earned a position as the secretary of the Denver Chamber of Commerce, which apparently made national news. According to an article, Agnes Vale was the only woman in the United States to be the secretary for a chamber of commerce in a major city.
Okay.
And apparently she did really well in that role. Male coworkers respected Agnes and said she had the, quote, brains of a man.
Oh, God. What a compliment.
I can think of no greater compliment, Kristen. So yeah, Agnes was back home, living with Dad, got herself a gerb, and the respect of working boys everywhere. But basically, all of Agnes Vale's free time was spent hiking and climbing mountains. She was a true Colorado mountain woman. So what do I mean by mountain woman? Author Janet Robertson defined mountain women as, quote, those who deliberately pursued mountain encounters rather than merely being passive observers forced to deal with the Colorado mountains because of circumstances beyond their control. Many of the first white women to arrive in Colorado were there because that's where their family settled down for a better life. And the idea of hiking and climbing a mountain was crazy, a complete waste of time. But some took a liking to the mountains. In 1858, a Kansas woman named Julia Archibald Holmes became the first woman to climb Pikes Peak, a 14er located about 100 miles south of Denver. By the way, fun fact about Julia Archibald Holmes, Kristen.
Wow.
Wow.
She was introduced to her husband through John Brown.
You're kidding me.
No. So her husband fought with John Brown in Kansas.
Wow.
And they... John Brown introduced her to him, and they got married, and then they moved to Denver.
You know, if I do have a critique of your John Brown series, is that it's that you didn't really focus on what he was like as a matchmaker. I really think all the slavery stuff, all the massacre, you really focused on that a whole lot, but we did not hear about all the love connections he made.
He is a man of many talents. At the summit of Pikes Peak, Julia Archibald Holmes wrote to her mother, quote, nearly everyone tried to discourage me from attempting it, but I believed that I should succeed. And now here I am, and I feel that I would not have missed this glorious sight for anything at all. Early mountain women like Julia Archibald Holmes or Isabella Bird rarely hiked alone. They often hiked in groups with men. They were usually privileged, well-educated, very close to their dads, came from big cities. Many of these mountain women were also either single or married and childless. And I would also suspect that some of them were...
lesbian! We're all thinking it, aren't we?
I love that clip! Okay, honestly, Norm, I'm so glad you said this because... first of all, the second you said she went to a women's college, I was like, which, but that means nothing in 1908.
Now, you made a mental note.
Mental note. Mm-hmm. But when she went and spent, what was it, 10 days?
10 days
off with Mrs.
Mrs. Hewitt?
Yeah, Mrs.
in Yosemite Valley.
What's her face? I was like, these ladies into each other, these roommates, really close friends.
Yeah.
Really close friends.
We're best long-term friends.
So was she gay? Or can you not really say?
Don't know.
Okay.
Was never married.
Uh-huh.
Was close to her dad. Liked hiking and climbing mountains.
Honey, don't ask, don't tell. Sometimes you don't have to ask.
Okay, so I didn't write this part down.
Uh-huh.
But I did read a story of Agnes Vale where she went hiking with one of her friends on Mount Yale.
Okay.
And the weather got bad, so they decided to spend the night on Mount Yale. And it was cold that night, and they started a fire, and they went to sleep. And when the friend woke up, Agnes was, like, spooning her.
Right.
And she was like, oh, she was trying to keep me warm.
Yeah.
But I was also like,
two things can be true.
Honestly, maybe Agnes was.
It sounds cold as hell up there. I wouldn't necessarily go there for that, but I mean, yeah.
I know. The 10-day trip with the female friend, spooning on the mountain.
Listen, I've gone on some girls' trips. It's 3 days max. 3 days max.
Go spooning on the mountain.
Cut my breast and flick my clit.
Whoa. Cut my breast?
Cup.
Oh, no, cup my breast. Cut. I my was God. Like, whoa.
You're really trying to turn this into a tragedy, aren't you? But that's cool, though, that, like, potentially she found a way to be herself. I mean, she didn't have to get married to some guy. I guess that's privilege.
Yeah, yeah. She was rich. There are several landmarks in Colorado named after mountain women. Places like Alberta Falls, which we have been to, Kristen.
Yeah.
And Lake Irene. Come on, Irene.
Da, na, na. However, it was named in 1985.
Yeah, that's right. However, what's interesting is that these landmarks only contain the woman's first name. Author Janet Robinson rightly points out that it makes tracing the origin of the names much harder. For example, Mount Alice in Colorado. We have no idea where that name comes from, and it's kind of hard to research the name Alice.
Yeah.
Compare that to spots named after dudes, where they always use the last name, Long's Peak, Bierstadt Lake. I just found that interesting.
Why do you think that is, Norm?
Because the men are more important.
So do you really...
I'm joking, by the way.
No, I know. But, like, I mean, really, do you think it's that simple as, like, if we're going to name it after this man, we need to use his full name out of respect? Or what do you think that's about?
I think it's just, like, the hierarchy of, like, yeah, it's named after this great and important man. It's very important. So we're gonna use the last name here. Whereas, like, with stuff named after women, they're like, oh, this is just a cute, fun tribute to my wife. And so it's Mount Alice or Lake Irene, you know?
Yeah, okay.
What do you think?
I mean, yeah, I think it's dropping a last name is a great way to pay tribute to someone without making the person seem too important.
Right.
And we'll come back. To give some power, but not all the power.
And we'll come back to this later, okay. By the way. All this to say, Agnes Vale definitely fit the criteria of a mountain woman. Single? Check. Close to dad? Check. Wealthy? Check. Explored the mountains on her own terms? Chickity? Check. And over the years, Agnes Vale honed her craft. She earned a reputation for being brave and having incredible endurance. She was one of the earliest female technical climbers in Colorado. Said one newspaper, no man in the Colorado Mountain Club could outdo her. And her accomplishments speak for themselves. In 1922, Agnes and her cousin, Lucretia Vale, became the first people, not women, people to climb Crestone Peak from the west side. A newspaper described their scary ascent, stating, quote, the young woman gained the top only after several hours of arduous effort. A misstep at many times would have resulted in a plunge to almost certain death.
First white people to do it?
I guess, yeah.
I just clarify. This, I don't know how people do this stuff.
What, mountain climbing?
I mean, yeah. So you and I hike. We love it. But when there are spots where it's like, oh, I take one stupid step and stumble and then I'm toast. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, technical climbing, I couldn't do. So that's like, you know, getting the ropes out and like...
Yeah, no thank you. Or like, what's it called when they're just freeballing? When they're just like...
Freeballing?
I know that's not what it's called. But when they're like, they don't do any ropes or anything.
Oh, free solo.
Free solo.
Yeah.
Freeballing is what we call it in this house.
Interesting.
That is awful.
That's that document. Well, there's a documentary called Free Solo about this guy that climbed some massive rock formation without ropes or anything. I'm just like, I'm glad this is an optional activity because I will never do this.
You know, if they'd called it free balling, it would have been a much bigger hit.
Free ball. I think a lot of people would be disappointed.
Well, still, but they would have given it a shot.
In 1923, Agnes Vale made the very first ascent of James Peak in the wintertime, where the rocks were covered in snow and slippery with ice. By 1924, Agnes Vale had climbed most of the 14ers in the United States, including every single one in Colorado.
Oh.
As a result, the Colorado Mountain Club named her the outing chairman, responsible for setting up hikes and climbs for other members. She had earned the respect and admiration of fellow club members, including one talented climber named Walter Keener. Let's talk about Walter Keener. He was from Switzerland, a.k.a. the land of chocolate.
We are from the land of chocolate.
Keener was a big buff boy, too. He was 6 feet tall, 225 pounds.
Okay.
I'm about to bust.
You know he was all muscle, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Walter Keener had really cut his teeth climbing the Swiss Alps. He worked as a guide for the Swiss Alpine Club, leading people through the mountains. But in 1922, he emigrated to the United States and made his way to Denver, Colorado, where he got a job as the foreman at a sausage factory. Abe Froman, perhaps?
Huh?
Abe Froman? Sausage King of Chicago, Kristen? Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Oh, sorry. I apologize.
It's okay.
I'm sure there are a lot of people listening to this who are just screaming along with you, Norm.
Norm Trooper recruitment is through the roof.
Yeah, this will piss a lot of people off that I looked at you blankly through that entire thing.
Huh? What? Movie?
I for real. I was like, I don't know. I'll eat a sausage. What are we talking about?
So yeah, Walter Keener emigrates to the United States, becomes the foreman at a sausage factory. But in his free time, Walter Keener would eat, sleep, and breathe the Colorado Mountains. So it was only natural that he joined the Colorado Mountain Club, and that's where he met Agnes Vale. Walter and Agnes got along very well. They had a mutual respect for each other. They enjoyed taking on technical, challenging climbs. And one day in the fall of 1924, Walter, Agnes, and two other members of the Colorado Mountain Club hiked to the top of Mount Evans, a 14er just west of Denver. And as the group rested at the summit, they could see the majestic Long's Peak off in the distance. Long's Peak was considered one of the ultimate tests of a Colorado mountain climber. It's the tallest mountain in Rocky Mountain National Park. There were multiple ways to get to the summit, some much more challenging than others. And unpredictable weather at higher elevations only added to the challenge. Agnes Vale and Walter Keener had both climbed Long's Peak before. Agnes had led several Colorado Mountain Club outings to the top, but only using the relatively safe path on the western face of the mountain. It's known as the Keyhole Route. Walter was a bit more daring. Back in the summer of 1923, he had ascended the east face of Long's Peak, a difficult, almost completely vertical 1,600-foot climb right above Chasm Lake. It required ropes, axes, special shoes. Leave your kids' canvases at home, folks.
But they're my best hiking shoes.
Walter Keener made a name for himself with that climb because it's known today as Keener's Route.
Okay.
Now, in the fall of 1924, admiring Long's Peak from afar, Walter Keener pitched an idea to his friend Agnes Vale. What if they made a winter ascent of the east face of Long's Peak? No one had ever done that before, and for good reason. It was incredibly dangerous. Climbing in the summer or fall had its own dangers like thunderstorms and rain. But winter climbing? That was a whole different beast. Snow blanketed the ground, making navigation incredibly difficult. And ice covering the rocks made everything extremely slippery. One wrong move would send you tumbling down the side of the mountain. Not only that, but climbers would have to use axes and crampons to dig into ice walls and climb up. Did I mention the sub-zero temperatures, Kristen?
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about that, but of course.
In fact, many people considered that climb impossible to do in the winter. But Agnes Vale was not one to turn down a challenge. She had seen war. She had worked and thrived in a male-dominated profession. She had climbed almost every 14er in the country. Nothing seemed impossible to her. And so Agnes Vale agreed. She and Walter Keener would attempt to climb the east face of Long's Peak in the winter. You might think this was a wild idea, Surely some Rocky Mountain National Park rangers would step in and stop them. Maybe rope off access to the mountain? What do you think, Kristen?
I don't know. This is early days, right? Maybe they didn't have that many people running things to even interfere?
Well, they didn't do anything.
Hell no, to the no, 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 hell to the no.
Because at that time, national parks operated on the idea of having as little human intervention as possible.
Mm.
Superintendent of Rocky Mountain National Park, Roger Toll, who also happened to be Agnes Vail's cousin, by the way, he stated, quote, "Certain wild sections of every park should be forever reserved from any development except by trails. National parks are destined to soon be the only sections of wilderness left in America, and wildlife thrives best in untouched wilderness." In other words, a mountain climber's safety was completely their own responsibility. But Agnes Vail and Walter Keener believed they could do it. Walter had climbed the east face before.
Hold on. Isn't that still kind of the case?
In regard to what?
Well, I mean, just talked about that freeballing guy. I mean, aren't people kind of allowed to climb at their own risk?
They are. So I'll say today there is a lot more public information about what it takes to climb a mountain, you know, what equipment you'll need, the risks involved, a lot of signage. Back then, it was kind of just, okay, do whatever you want.
Well, and yeah, and I'm even thinking now about, like, anytime we've gone to a national park, they take our ID, you know, they know who's coming and going.
Right.
Okay.
But yeah, when the park first opened, it was really just, here it is.
Right.
You know, they had park rangers looking for fires, and obviously if somebody needed rescue, they would help them. But, like, as far as, like, educational programs and all that, it was very, very minimal.
Mm.
So yeah, Agnes Vail and Walter Keener believed they could do this climb. Walter had climbed the east face of Long's Peak before. And again, he was a big, buff, sexy boy. Agnes had done plenty of technical climbs herself, and making this ascent would be a huge personal accomplishment. Agnes also felt she was in good hands. Walter Keener would be leading the climb. And the cardinal rule of the Colorado Mountain Club was always, let the leader lead. And so if Walter thought they could do it, she was good with it, too. Nothing was going to stop them from trying. In October of 1924, Agnes Vail and Walter Keener made their first attempt at climbing the east face of Long's Peak. Technically, it wasn't winter time, but perhaps this was just like a practice run to get some experience on the route. But even in October, Long's Peak was full of ice and snow. By the late afternoon, the sun was beginning to set. And during an ascent on a steep rock wall, Walter Keener dropped his ice axe, something he absolutely needed to create steps. As the leader, Walter made the call. They had to turn back. So he and Agnes made their way down safely and returned to camp. The next month, in November, they decided to try again. Before their climb, Agnes Vail phoned a friend and fellow Colorado Mountain Club member, Carl Blaurock. She wanted to borrow his ice axe. Curious, Carl said, sure, but why exactly do you need this? Agnes responded that she and Walter were trying to climb the east face of Long's Peak. Carl Blaurock was horrified.
Mm.
He said climbing the east face of Long's Peak in the winter was
dangerous. That girl is so
dangerous.
That girl is
so bad. Oh, I know it's going to be bad, but you got all these fun songs.
I'm trying to keep it light for you.
That is weird. It's impossible to keep this
light. Gotta take care of my wife during this tragedy story. So yeah, Carl Blaurock was like, you two are nuts. Like, you can't make that climb.
Yeah.
Way too dangerous. But Agnes Vail could not be convinced to change her mind. So instead, Carl said, fine, I'm going with you.
Oh.
So in November of 1924, Walter, Agnes, and Carl made their way up Long's Peak. But that second attempt didn't go as planned. The snow caused them to make a few errors in choosing their route to the top. They got further than last time, but eventually it got too dark and the temperature too low, so they had to turn around. When they returned safely to Denver, Carl again urged them both to not try again. It was not worth the risk. Carl later recalled, quote, I tried to talk them into waiting, but no, they wouldn't.
Why wouldn't they?
I think they were just wanting to be the first people to make the winter ascent of the east face of Long's Peak. It was a major accomplishment.
Thing.
Yeah, well, and you have all these people saying it's impossible. You can't do it. It can't be done. In December of 1924, Walter and Agnes tried again. But fierce winds and snow turned them back, resulting in their third failed attempt. Still, they wanted to try again. By this point, Agnes Vale's friends and family were concerned. Agnes and Walter seemed to have some sort of obsession with making the climb, despite the huge risks. They became united in trying to convince them to not do it. But ironically, this only fueled both Walter and Agnes's motivation. No one's going to tell me I can't do something.
Mm.
You know, maybe it's a little spitey, a little bit, diet spite.
It is a little defiant, for sure.
Yeah. So they agreed that after the holidays, in January, they would try again. That Christmas, Agnes Vale sent out cards to her family and friends with the following message. I hope that this Christmas day will be full of joy for you, and that the coming year will be brimming over with opportunity, achievement, and happiness. These mountains are sending you this message, too. Those mountains, like Long's Peak, would prove to be not so full of joy. Saturday, January 10th, 1925. In the morning, Agnes Vale worked a half day at the Denver Chamber of Commerce. At around 1 p.m., she and Walter Keener loaded up her Dodge Roadster and drove off towards Long's Peak. Joining them this time was Agnes's friend, Eleanor Epic. Eleanor was only there to keep them company. She would not be attempting the climb. On the way up, Agnes's car skidded several times on the ice, a bad sign for the climb ahead. And then, about a mile from their destination, the car gave out completely after hitting a few snowdrifts.
Ugh.
The group abandoned the car and skied the rest of the way to Long's Peak Inn. They got there at around 8 p.m. Inside, they chatted with the young 26-year-old caretaker, Herbert Sortland. Sortland was from North Dakota, but the mountains of Colorado had called to him. He jumped at the opportunity to work at the Long's Peak Inn and had been there since 1924. After a brief chat and rest, Agnes Vale, Walter Keener, and Eleanor Epic headed out onto the Long's Peak trailhead. They hiked for more than 2 miles in the night through a dense forest of pine, spruce, and fir trees. Sunday, January 11th, 1925. At around 3 a.m., the party reached the Timberline Cabin. It's located just above the tree line on the Long's Peak Trail. It's around 11,000 feet above sea level. Inside, snow had seeped through cracks in the logs. The group quickly lit a fire in the stove and warmed themselves up before falling asleep. They woke up at around 8 a.m. Eleanor recalled that the sun was out, but it was extremely cold, with strong winds she could only describe as cruel.
Mm.
The trio ate breakfast. When Walter stepped away for a moment, Eleanor asked Agnes if they still planned to make the climb in those strong winds. Agnes hesitated for a moment and then said, "I don't think we'll go." Eleanor was relieved to hear that. She had been one of Agnes's many friends who had tried to convince her to not make that climb. Eleanor then stepped away to use the bathroom. But when she got back, she saw Walter and Agnes suiting up, getting ready to leave. Apparently, Walter had convinced Agnes to make the climb. And again, Agnes believed in the cardinal rule of the Colorado Mountain Club: the leader leads.
See, this is interesting to me because on the one hand, I'm like, okay, that makes total sense. But to me, it only makes sense once you're out there. They're still at the inn right now. They're in the Holiday Inn. They're getting their continental breakfast, right?
Nope. So they're at the Timberline Cabin, which is technically on the trail. They're kind of out there. Now, they're not in the dangerous part of the climb at all. So they have technically started their ascent.
Okay. I think if you're still in a cabin situation, there's room to turn back.
There was nothing Eleanor could do. She later recalled, quote, "Nothing but complete physical exhaustion could have persuaded Agnes to object or renege on the leader's course." Eleanor wished them luck and headed back down the mountain to Long's Peak Inn. She would wait for them there. At around 9 a.m., Walter Keener and Agnes Vale began their ascent. It was a somewhat late start, but Walter believed they could make up time on the way up. The journey was easy at first. Walter and Agnes quickly made their way through the subalpine zone, an open landscape with gorgeous views of the surrounding mountains. In the springtime, this area is full of wild mountain flowers, rocky terrain, and gnarly, twisted trees. But for Walter and Agnes in January, it was just a blanket of snow. They hiked for 1.5 miles before reaching a junction point. To the right was the boulder field and the keyhole route, the easiest way up the summit. To the left was Chasm Lake, a beautiful, crystal-clear lake that sat below the east face of Long's Peak. Walter and Agnes headed left, and they soon reached Chasm Lake. From there, they retraced their earlier attempts. They climbed up the steep slope known as Lamb Slide, and then they carefully shimmied across a 1,000-foot-long ledge known as Broadway.
Good grief.
Finally, they arrived at the Notch Couloir. It's like a rock chimney.
Okay.
And that's when their trouble began. The Notch was covered in snow and thick sheets of ice. It was way worse than any of their previous climbs. For the next 4 hours, Walter and Agnes slowly cut steps into the ice and made their way up. By 4 p.m., they had made it through the Notch. But the sun was now going down. Temperatures were falling below zero, and the difficult climb through the Notch had worn on Agnes Vale. Walter noted, quote, "I was greatly perturbed and grieved to note that my companion's strength was about spent. For the past 2 hours, she had been almost helpless. And often as we paused, she complained and apologized for being such a burden on my hands." It was at this time, in my opinion, Walter Keener should have made the call to turn around. But instead, he told Agnes Vale they would push forward.
Okay, hold on.
Are you fucking stupid?
Not to defend this guy too much, but like at a certain point, once you've done all that, is it safe to turn back? Can you turn back? I mean, I guess you can always turn back, but depending on the time of day, depending on how exhausted you are.
Well, the thing with a winter ascent is you do not want to spend long when the sun is down and the temperatures are below zero, because you're at risk of hypothermia.
Right.
And you'll just die. And so you really have to like look at the timing and the temperatures and yeah, how tired are we? And so like they really struggled up the Notch. Agnes was clearly exhausted.
Yeah.
And so I think at this point they should have said it's too risky to keep going because they still have to go to the summit. They're not there yet.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, just turn back around.
Cut your losses.
Yep.
Okay.
Agnes Vale, though weak, remembered that cardinal rule, the leader leads. And so she kept going. They were close to the summit, but the remaining climb would be very difficult. They would have to scramble up icy rocks along the edge of a massive face known as the Diamond before making their way up another rock chimney, and then they had to finish with another scramble. By the way, they also had lost both of their lanterns by that point, so they were completely in the dark now. Walter Keener later recalled the final moments of their ascent. He wrote, quote, "The last 12 hours of the climb was made in complete darkness, and the way was exceedingly tantalizing. The face of the mountain at this point is a series of projections, like great steps, covered by a blanket of snow and ice. One step would be on the sheer rock face just underneath a thin covering of ice. The next, we would sink to our waists in snow. Every step we advanced became an effort of dogged labor." Meanwhile, Agnes Vale was completely spent, to the point that Walter Keener was now pulling her up the ropes completely by himself.
Good grief.
They were fading fast. But they still clung to hope. They would not fail this ascent. The summit was so close, and there was no turning back now. Monday, January 12th, 1925. It was just past midnight, and back at the Long's Peak Inn, Eleanor nervously waited for Walter Keener and Agnes Vale to come back. She stayed awake as long as she could, listening out for their voices in the night, but eventually she dozed off to sleep. Meanwhile, at the top of Long's Peak, at around 4 a.m., Walter and Agnes climbed the very last rock, and they reached the summit.
Yes!
They had done it, Kristen!
I mean, that is incredible.
They had become the first people to ascend the east face of Long's Peak in the winter. Huge deal.
Yeah.
And reaching the very top seemed to rejuvenate them. Kind of gave them a shot of adrenaline.
That makes sense.
Yeah. They celebrated together in the eerie, silent darkness. Which, that must have been a really strange experience to be all alone at the top of that mountain.
Yeah.
In the dark. Like, you hear nothing.
Well, and I wonder what they could really see.
Probably not much, but it is 4 a.m. The sun is probably going to rise soon.
Mm-hmm.
So they would get some pretty incredible views.
Yeah. What did they pack to eat?
I have no idea.
Combos? Jerky?
Bugles. Just a ton of bugles.
So many bugles.
You know, they last a long time out in the cold.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. They'll fill you up.
Yep. Don't know why I like bugles, but I do.
No one does.
I like bugles. To put them on my fingers.
I meant no one understands why we all love bugles.
It's because you can put them on your fingers, yeah, like little hats.
It
or
starts as a child, and then the love takes you through life.
Yeah. So yeah, they're celebrating on top of Long's Peak, and Agnes suggested, "Hey, let's rest for a little bit, and then we'll sign the logbook." You know, there's a little logbook at the top where you could write your name and some silly message like smell you later or whatever.
Sure.
But Walter Keener thought otherwise. He was like, hey, it's 14 degrees below zero. There are clouds rolling in over the summit. We kind of can't see anything. The wind's starting to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And so Walter suggested they just start their descent immediately. But they didn't want to go the same way they came up. Instead, Walter wanted to descend down along the north face of Long's Peak, toward the boulder field. The north face was a much quicker descent than the east face, which they climbed up. And that was important given the conditions. But it was also much more dangerous in the winter. In fact, back in 1917, Agnes Vale's cousin and Rocky Mountain National Park Superintendent Roger Toll, he had climbed the north face of Long's Peak, and he had noted that the route, quote, should never be attempted when there is ice on the rocks. Walter and Agnes both knew that information, but they decided to take the risk anyway because they wanted to get down from Long's Peak as quickly as possible.
That is a tough call.
Yeah.
If you feel like we are too exhausted and too spent to go back down the east side.
Yeah. The east face was such a challenging ascent. It would be an incredibly challenging descent.
Yeah.
And so they felt like the north face is much quicker. We got to get out of this freezing temperature. We got to get back to the cabin.
Yeah.
Even though it is much riskier.
And I feel like when you're that tired, you're so much more. I mean, it just takes the slightest mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
This is called foreshadowing.
Before they descended, the sun of daybreak peeked through the clouds. And in that moment, Walter could clearly see Agnes Vale's face. He wrote, quote, "The light of the dawn revealed the features of my brave companion, for they were those of one who was doomed. The most appalling lines of suffering and anguish, pained, haggard, and deep drawn, had developed in the countenance of that heroic woman. Her eyes were fearfully bloodshot, and she now talked in tones that seemed supernatural." In other words, Agnes Vale was showing signs of hypothermia, when the body's temperature drops below 95 degrees. Symptoms can include shivering, slurred speech, confusion, fumbling hands, extreme fatigue. Walter asked Agnes if she could go on. Agnes nodded. I mean, what choice did she have?
Yeah.
So they began their descent down the north face. By 9:30 a.m., the duo had descended 750 feet in 5 hours. They could see the boulder field in the distance, and once they reached that, it would be an easy journey back to the timberline cabin. All they had to do was get around a few rock formations. When they approached one large rock, Walter tried to navigate Agnes around it, but in her confused hypothermic state, she instead tried to go over top the rock.
Mm.
Agnes's feet hit a patch of ice, and she slipped. And she fell down the north face of Long's Peak. more than 150 feet below in the snow. She eventually came to a stop, laying motionless. Walter panicked. He descended as fast as he could to reach her. When he finally did, he was amazed to discover that she had not been seriously injured from the fall. But there was worse news. Agnes Vale's hands and feet were now partially frozen. The hypothermia was setting in. If they didn't move fast, it would be fatal. Walter picked Agnes up, and they kept going. She could barely hold on to him as his knees shook from exhaustion. The two barely walked 100 feet before Agnes Vale collapsed again. Walter bent down and asked if she could go on. Agnes said no. She was tired. So, so tired. They had been awake for 24 hours by that point, in freezing temperatures, exhausted from climbing. Agnes told Walter that she wanted to take a nap. Just a little one, maybe 30 minutes, and then she'd be okay. The reality was Agnes Vale was dying, and Walter knew it. He picked Agnes up again and set her by a crop of rocks to help shield her from the wind. He set her knapsack under her head to act as a pillow. Agnes lay still, holding her ice axe close to her chest. Walter noted she seemed to, quote, cling to it as a treasured thing. And then at around 10:30 a.m., Walter Keener ran for help. As Agnes Vale lay dying near the bottom of the north face of Long's Peak, he ran as fast as he could down the mountain. He was riddled with guilt. Several times he considered turning back to die with Agnes, but he kept going through the thick snow and biting winds. Meanwhile, Eleanor Epic had awakened to discover Walter and Agnes had still not made it back. She immediately phoned Agnes's cousin, Roger Toll, superintendent of Rocky Mountain National Park. Roger Toll was in Denver and would need some time to reach Long's Peak. He instructed Eleanor to not go out and look for them. It was too dangerous. She needed to wait for park rangers to arrive. Eleanor ignored him.
Ugh.
She rounded up a couple of employees and asked them to accompany her to the Timberline cabin. Perhaps Walter and Agnes were stuck there. But the employees took one look at the weather and were like,
hell no, to the no, 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 hell to the no.
Eleanor even offered to pay them, but still they refused. So she did the only thing she could think of. She said, quote, when all else failed, I cried. And that worked. So Eleanor Epic and four employees from the Long's Peak Inn took off for the Timberline cabin. Those employees were Jacob Christian, Hugh Brown, his son Oscar Brown, and Herbert Sortland, the caretaker from North Dakota. When they arrived at the Timberline cabin, they found it empty. Walter and Agnes were officially missing. The men immediately started gearing up to go out and look for them. But then, at around 1 p.m., Walter Keener staggered into the Timberline cabin, exhausted and freezing. He was elated to see the rescue group.
You know, yeah.
Shout out to Eleanor for making that happen. But he also relayed the bad news. Agnes had collapsed near the north face of Long's Peak, and they needed to rescue her immediately. Eleanor and the young boy, Oscar Brown, agreed to stay behind at the Timberline cabin and keep a fire going. The others would head out to find Agnes Vale. Amazingly, Walter Keener went with them. But it soon became apparent that the employees of Long's Peak Inn were ill-prepared to carry out a rescue mission. The wind had picked up considerably and the temperatures continued to plummet. The men simply didn't have the right gear to do this. After climbing around 500 feet of elevation, Hugh Brown had had enough. He turned around and went back. 300 feet further up, the young caretaker, Herbert Sortland, dropped out and turned back. The rescue party was now down to two men, Walter Keener and an ice cutter named Jacob Christian. Incredibly, they pressed forward, and by 4:30 p.m., they had reached Agnes Vale. Sadly, they were too late. Agnes Vale was dead. Her body was now completely frozen. She was face down in the snow, evidence that she had tried to get back up, but collapsed. Walter Keener and Jacob Christian were ill-equipped to haul a frozen body down the mountain. Walter later wrote, quote, The gale was raging in unabated fury, driving the cold against our bodies without cessation or mercy. There was nothing to do but return, for we could not carry the body. We would do well if we got back alive ourselves. Survival was definitely at the forefront of Walter Keener's mind. He was, at this point, a full-on wreck. He had not slept for almost 48 hours. He could barely keep his balance. His feet were frozen. He said it was like walking on stilts.
Yeah.
His hands were also frozen. His fingers, quote, rattled like icicles. But thanks to Jacob Christian, the two made it back to the Timberline cabin by 7:30 p.m. And as everyone warmed up by the fire and reassessed the situation, someone noted that Herbert Sortland, the caretaker of the Long's Peak Inn, was missing. He had never returned after dropping out of the rescue party. A few folks searched around the timberline, shouting for him, but there was nothing but silence. By 10 p.m., park rangers had arrived. Walter Keener was quickly taken back to Denver for emergency medical care for frostbite. Agnes Vale's body was still out there, frozen, in the snow, up on Long's Peak. But it was now pitch black outside. There was a full-on blizzard raging on the mountain, and all the park rangers could do was wait. Tuesday, January 13th, 1925. At around 4:30 a.m., Rocky Mountain National Park Superintendent Roger Toll arrived with a rescue party of veteran mountain climbers from the Colorado Mountain Club, including Carl Blaurock, the man who had pleaded with Walter and Agnes to not make the ascent in the winter. Unfortunately, they still couldn't go out to retrieve Agnes Vale's body. A massive blizzard was still raging on Long's Peak. Temperatures were now 50 below zero.
Oh my God.
In addition to Agnes Vale, the rescue team also had to find Herbert Sortland. If he was still out there, he was dead. Their only hope was that Sortland had been picked up by some other climbers or had wandered into a cabin for shelter. But with a blizzard in full effect, all the rescuers could do was wait. And for the next 2 days, that's what they did. Thursday, January 15th, 1925. That day, the blizzard finally eased up. Rescuers made their way to the north face of Long's Peak, and there they found Agnes Vale's body, still in the same spot, 13,300 feet up. Rescuers put Agnes's body on a makeshift stretcher made of skis and took her down the mountain. Unfortunately, they still couldn't locate Herbert Sortland. Back in Denver, authorities notified Agnes Vale's family that they had finally retrieved her. The Vale family had known Agnes was dead for a few days now, but they were probably anxious for updates about getting her body back.
Yeah.
The press had also been talking about the death of Agnes Vale for a few days. Most articles focused on what a horrific tragedy it all was. But some assholes just couldn't help themselves, Kristen. A writer for the New York World commented, quote, "The formidable Colorado Peak, smoking in a blizzard, must have flung out a challenge to this woman that we can well understand. Sorrow for her, however, seems misplaced. They are a star-eyed race, these mountain climbers. She had her great moment. Who are we to be feeling sorry for her?"
Oof.
Yeah, isn't that brutal? Thoughts?
I don't think you'll like my thoughts.
Uh-oh. Sizzling take. Here we go.
Well, first of all, yeah, that's way too harsh.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I do, if a grown adult decides to do a very dangerous thing and things go wrong, obviously, I feel terrible for them. And we should all feel terrible for them. I hate that that ill-prepared rescue party was guilted into going after her.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had no business doing that. They didn't know what they were doing, and they were putting themselves and then others at an even greater risk. You know, it's
certainly, yeah.
Are you horrified by my opinion?
No, I think it's a fair take. Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I do think, obviously, there are risks when you do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that this writer lacks sympathy or empathy.
Sure. No, this writer's being a total asshole, for sure.
Yeah, that, I just think it's a little too harsh, that's all.
But I do think, you know, I don't know. There's something to me about a person knowingly doing something really, really freaking dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it when it then puts other people at risk, other people who did not want to make that choice.
Sure. Well, and like, to their credit, a few of those guys said, yeah, I'm not doing this. And they went back from the rescue party. Sadly, one of them went missing. But in the same vein, they probably also knew the risks of what they were doing, trying to go out and rescue her.
But I mean, it's a question of risk and reward to me because, you know, she and Walter went out there to kind of set a record and to do something cool. That rescue team was trying to save a person's life.
Yeah.
That's different. That's just totally different. And then you've got their crying loved one there. What mm-hmm. a terrible position to be put in.
Yeah. It's just a tragedy all around. I get what you're saying, though.
Okay. I feel terrible for Agnes, terrible for Walter, but there's a limit to it.
Sure.
When you do something like this, you also know that you run the risk of desperately needing people's help. And that when those people are called upon to help you, they are putting themselves at risk. It feels selfish to me.
Yeah, it was irresponsible. And that is why I said earlier, Walter should have turned them around after they climbed up the notch. And as the leader, he should have known to do that.
But also she should have spoken up too.
That's fair. You know, they have this rule of like, when you're making a climb, one person's in charge and you listen to them. And so I'm sure she was just following the protocol. But you're right. There is, you know, free will. There is like, hey, you may want to keep going, but screw you guys. I'm going home.
Yeah. And it could be, you may want to keep going, but I know my body. Mm-hmm. I know I don't have this in me. And I know that I will be a burden on you if we keep going. And so as much as you don't want to hear it, I have to turn around.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. The only account we have of their climb is written by Walter Keener.
That's what is, yeah.
So we don't know Agnes's side of the story. You know, in Walter's writings, he said Agnes wanted to keep going. Agnes wanted to keep going, but did she?
Well, I actually was thinking it was very interesting that we did hear how badly she was doing and how she was suffering, because I would think that if he was trying to save face, he might be like, yeah, you know, she was doing great. Everything was fine. We were really killing it. And then, oh my God, she hit this patch of ice. And that's the thing that mm-hmm. did it.
Yeah.
This does feel more honest to me.
That's true.
That he's like, yeah, it kind of sucked.
Yeah, and he was like, yeah, to pull her up.
Right.
By myself. But I do think it kind of feeds into a narrative I'm about to talk about here.
Oh, okay.
And that's probably why he may have said those things.
Which is that women can't do this?
It was basically that Agnes was stupid for trying to make the climb. She was ill-prepared. She had no experience. Oh. When that was not true. Agnes Vail was one of the best climbers in Colorado.
Right.
So we have this writer for the New York World who wrote this, you know,
Terrible thing.
We shouldn't feel sorry for Agnes Vail. Other writers commented that basically Agnes Vail was a fool for trying to make that climb. She didn't have any experience. She was in way over her head. She was just a dainty little lady with delusions of grandeur.
Mm.
And those takes, they really upset Agnes Vail's friend, Eleanor Epic, because Agnes was extremely qualified. She had put her trust into the leader of the climb, Walter Keener. Eleanor believed if anyone should be blamed for the death of Agnes Vail, it was Walter Keener. He had made the call to continue the climb, despite the lack of daylight, Agnes's exhaustion, harsh weather conditions. Speaking of Walter Kiener, he underwent several operations right away. Doctor's biggest concern was blood poisoning, a.k.a. sepsis.
Yeah.
Massive skin tissue death releases toxins and bacteria into your bloodstream, which causes the infection. Walter Kiener lost most of his toes, part of one foot, and many of his fingers. Sunday, January 18th, 1925. That day at around 3 p.m., the funeral of Agnes Vale took place at the Plymouth Congregational Church in Denver. It was a packed house filled with Agnes Vale's friends, family, and members of the Colorado Mountain Club. Even Walter Kiener, recovering from his wounds, paid his respects with a Swiss Alpine Club custom. He dedicated a wreath of evergreen twigs bound by a rope that was broken in one place. The broken rope symbolized that a life had been lost. Mm. Speaking of life, there was still one person missing from this horrible tragedy, Herbert Sortland, the caretaker of the Long's Peak Inn. Park rangers continued to look for him. They camped out on Long's Peak, searching every day for his body, but they found nothing. Wednesday, February 25th, 1925. Almost 6 weeks after going missing, Herbert Sortland's body was finally found. He was in a place no one had bothered to look, on a slope just across the street from the Long's Peak Inn, away from the mountain. He was a mere 300 yards away from Long's Peak Inn. Authorities believed Herbert Sortland had gotten lost in the blizzard on the way back, and he overshot the Long's Peak Inn. He tried to turn back, but collapsed from exhaustion and died from hypothermia. But an autopsy later revealed that Herbert Sortland's death was actually caused by a broken hip. He more than likely fell on his way down from the icy slopes of Long's Peak. The death of Agnes Vale and Herbert Sortland sent shockwaves through the climbing community of Colorado. Roger Toll, superintendent of Rocky Mountain National Park, knew that changes needed to be made. But Roger Toll had to find a balance. You know, a core belief of the national parks was that they were best experienced with as little human interference as possible. Park rangers ultimately decided that there was no way they could completely eliminate accidents, bad luck, or poor judgment among mountain climbers. That was out of their control. But what they could control was educational messaging and rescue efforts. So Roger Toll added campgrounds, ranger stations, entrance checkpoints, educational programs to Rocky Mountain National Park. They also installed 2 steel cables and an emergency telephone on the steep north face of Long's Peak, where Agnes Vale died. It later became known as the cable route. In addition, Roger Toll wanted to provide safe places for any climbers trapped in bad weather. He tore down the old timberline cabin and installed new ones. At Chasm Lake, they built an emergency shelter cabin. And then even further up at the Boulder Field, they built a primitive hotel called the Boulder Field Shelter Cabin. It provided food, beds, and bathrooms, and could accommodate up to 16 people. Sadly, that's no longer there, but if you hike up to the Boulder Field, you can see the foundation.
Oh, that's
still
cool.
Yeah. Roger Toll also hired more park rangers to take care of Rocky Mountain National Park, and one of them was Walter Kiener. Kiener could no longer work at the sausage factory due to losing most of his fingers, so Roger Toll made him a fire guard at Twin Sisters Mountains, just across from Long's Peak. Kristen, we hiked up Twin Sisters.
Yeah, that was a beautiful hike.
Ooh, that took it out of me, though.
Me too.
Yeah. Beautiful views. But just to kind of give a, comparison, the top of Twin Sisters, that has an elevation of 11,428 feet. Long's Peak is, 14,259 feet.
So really close, and we're almost as good as these mountain climbers.
It's basically a 14er.
Yeah, basically.
We're going to count if you round up.
And you should. You absolutely should.
A couple times round up. Yeah. But yeah, Walter Kiener was made the fire guard at Twin Sisters Mountains. And so for the next 5 summers, Walter Kiener served as the fire guard. It was a job with mixed emotions. You know, he loved working as a park ranger. He was incredibly knowledgeable. He offered guided hikes. But in that job, he had a clear view of Long's Peak and the north face of Long's Peak, where Agnes Vale had died. It was like a frequent reminder of that horrible climb. Walter Keener earned $100 a month at that job, and he needed the money badly. His medical bills were piling up, in excess of $1,000. Just for inflation, $20,000.
And how much is $100 a month, adjusted for inflation?
Ooh! Let me tell you. Like $1,900.
Okay.
He was clearly struggling with what happened. At one point, he suggested to Eleanor Epic that he should sue the Vale family for damages.
What?
Yep.
Why?
You know, it's not clear why, but it was basically like, oh, Agnes, like, forced me to go on that dangerous climb and, you know, look at the damage, look at my finger. I don't have fingers anymore and no toes. And
dude.
But Eleanor Epic scolded him.
Yeah.
She said, quote, "Wasn't this just as much your trip as hers? Didn't you want to go too?
Weren't you the leader?"
Right. Walter solemnly agreed, and he never brought up the idea again.
He was just desperate.
He was desperate, yeah. But the Vale family didn't hold any ill will towards Walter Keener. In fact, they seemed grateful that Walter was by Agnes's side that day. Perhaps they felt that Agnes died doing what she loved, climbing a mountain. Agnes's father, Frederick Vale, used his wealth to honor his adventurous daughter and to do good in the world. First, he paid for all of Walter Keener's medical bills. And then in 1927, he commissioned for a stone shelter to be built near the popular keyhole route of Long's Peak. It was made entirely of stone to blend in with the natural surroundings. And inside was emergency food and a safe shelter from harsh weather at the top of Long's Peak. It was named the Agnes Vale Memorial Shelter. A plaque to the left of the door read, "Agnes Walcott Vale. This shelter commemorates a Colorado mountaineer conquered by winter after scaling the precipice on January 12, 1925, and one who lost his life in an effort to aid her, Herbert Sortland." Walter Keener eventually left Colorado and enrolled at the University of Nebraska, completely funded by Frederick Vale. And in 1939, Walter Keener earned his Ph.D. in botany. His doctoral dissertation was on the alpine vegetation of Long's Peak. Walter Keener ended up teaching at the University of Nebraska and also worked for the Nebraska Game, Forestation, and Parks Commission. He died in 1959 at the age of 64. Today, the university holds more than 25,000 plant specimens on file that were collected by Walter Keener.
Wow.
What can we learn from the death of Agnes Vale? Some people hear this story and think, Agnes Vale should have never made that climb. It was too dangerous. And obviously, yeah, it was extremely dangerous and risky. But nothing was going to stop Agnes Vale from trying to make that ascent. And in the end, she died as she lived, a thrill seeker looking for the next great climb. And a lot of positive things came out of this tragedy. The changes to Rocky Mountain National Park in the aftermath made the park much safer for everyone. And that's evident today. Every year, more than 30,000 people safely climb to the summit of Long's Peak. But perhaps the biggest proof of the impact of Agnes Vale comes from a waterfall they named after her. It's located in the San Isabel National Forest near Buena Vista, Colorado. And when authorities named it, they used her full name, Agnes Vale Falls. And that's the story of a tragedy on Long's Peak.
Wow. Beautifully told, Norm.
Thanks. Sorry it was such a bummer, everybody.
No, it was, I mean, it's an interesting story.
Yeah, I've always been, we read about it when we went on vacation one year to Colorado. And I was like, whoa, I need to know more.
Well, it's a fascinating thing, right? Independence, free will, the appreciation of nature, and then that balance of safety. And safety not just for the adventurer, but for the people who are then in the position to rescue adventurers.
Yeah. I was amazed that a woman was doing this in the early 20th century. And, like, an extremely courageous thing, like climbing Long's Peak in the winter, that's scary. I would never do it.
It's wild. Yeah. I mean, it's really incredible.
Yeah. It was just sad, you know?
Sure.
Just sad.
I think it's sad, especially when someone dies doing something courageous, because it does allow us to be, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
including me.
Mm-hmm. I apologize for that episode. That was such a bummer. I'm sorry that we bummed everyone out right before we go on break.
Well, love, we like a good mix of things on this podcast.
Yeah, I need some fun stuff when we get back.
Norm, are you really feeling bad about
I'm feeling
presenting?
Bad,
no,
yeah.
it was a good story.
I'm doing History of Furby when we get back. Let's
please
have some
do.
Fun.
Honestly, I kind of do want to know how the hell we ended up with such a horrific creation.
How dare you?
How dare you?
That's my
bum
son.
Us out right before vacation.
Yeah, I do. I am sorry. Well, speaking of vacations, Kristen.
Yes.
I thought for the slop this week, we would talk about some of our favorite vacation moments. What do you think?
I think that's a good idea. I've got some stories prepared about okay. you, sir.
Oh, so yeah, if you are not on the $10 tier of our Patreon, which is where you get exclusive access to the slop, get on there because we've got some wild tales to tell. Folks, thank you for listening to this segment of The Slop. We talked a lot about heaping piles of turds.
Yeah, folks, those of you who did not sign up at the pig butter level, you're really missing out because the vacation stories took a quick, weird turn into IBS.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't entice you to join our Patreon, mm-hmm. I don't know what will, okay? I don't know what will.
Yeah.
What do you want from us?
If you eat pig butter, I bet that'll block you up real quick.
It'll block you up or clean you out. One of the two. It won't be nothing. That's
right.
What
there's
we know.
There's no middle ground with pig butter.
You won't be fine. Yeah. We guarantee it.
Yeah. Well, should we wrap up this episode and head on out for our break?
Yeah, let's do it. You know what they say about history hoes? We always cite our sources.
Yeah, I forgot to add my sources.
Wow. While Norm's doing that, I should say we're going to miss you all a lot. We love doing this podcast. We're excited for our break, though.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know what they say about history, hoes. We always cite our sources.
That's right. For this episode, I got my information from the book, The Magnificent Mountain Women, Adventures in the Colorado Rockies by Janet Robertson. In the book, People and Nature on the Mountaintop, a resource and impact study of Long's Peak in Rocky Mountain National Park by Ruth M. Alexander. Plus a whole bunch of other sources. Check the show notes.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening to an old-timey podcast.
Please give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. And while you're at it, subscribe. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/oldtimeypodcast. Join the Reddit community, r/oldtimeypodcast. Follow us on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram at Old Timey Podcast. You can also follow us individually on Instagram. She is the beautiful Kristen Pitts Caruso. I go by Gaming Historian. And until next time, toodaloo, ta-ta, and cheerio.
Bye. See you after the break.
Bye.